gentlemen. It is your host, Sean Kane. Lineup Logic DFS coming at you. We are back from the All-Star break. We are rested. We are rejuvenated. We are thirsty for DFS. We are thirsty for baseball. I am, you know, basically spinning my wheels, just refreshing Twitter for the last 4 days. No, I'm kidding. I've been working on, you know, quite a bit of content over at the blog, lineuplogicdfs.com. So I realize that I maybe don't do a good job of talking about the website because even some of my subscribers, guys who have been with us for a long time, are like, oh, that's cool. You guys have a website. Yeah, we have a website, lineuplogicdfs.com, all one word, no spaces there. Got some content coming out over there about video series on strategy of pitcher selection, hitter selection. I'm going to continue to do some of those. Did an interview with a good friend of the show, great, all-around great guy, full-time DFS player, Average Joe DFS. That was a great talk. We talked about things that we did. Did an interview that was released today, released Thursday, with Jamie Calandro of Fantasy Team Advice, a wonderful file. Follow JAC360 on Twitter. Fantasy Team Advice is a great follow as well. All one word there. Providing just, you know, similar to Lineup Logic, just good analysts who are good dudes, giving good takes and approachable, friendly dudes. So great interviews there. Good follows. Check out the website, man. All that content up there is worth your time, I think. I don't know. I think it is. Worth checking out, trying to learn something that maybe you just don't have in your process, in your playbook right now. I think it could be worth it. But we're back, man. It's time to get back into DFS talk. And of course, it's Friday, big Friday slate. So I got my man, the professor, Josh Fernandez, on here to help me break down this player breakdown. But before we jump into that, let's go ahead and let's take a look at the slate that we have upcoming. Okay, so like I said, 15 games coming up. Coming up all on the main slate. And, you know, here's the annoying thing. Vegas is really dragging their feet on this one. We still have not seen Vegas lines released for this slate. I'm working late Thursday. Still haven't really seen stuff come up. I don't know. I could be wrong. But, you know, I always say, all right, I'm going to give you the matchups. I'll give you the pitchers, the idea, what's going on with the weather. Obviously, I don't have any Vegas information, which is annoying, and you don't have a complete picture. But two places you go for that Vegas information: Roto Grinders lineups page. It's right there on their lineups page, their implied run total for the two teams involved, and then Fantasy Labs Vegas dashboard. That you can also see where money is going and where lines are moving, as far as, you know, where they open and where they're at now. So that is a great tool as well to see how's the public reacting to these lines. First game of the night, Cardinals Pirates. This one does have a little bit of rain in the forecast. We're going to keep our eye on it, but it's Mike Leake versus Garrett Cole. Not a particularly appealing matchup. Neither pitcher nor offense is very interesting, but here is a really interesting stat about the Cardinals. They are actually first in the National League in barrel rate. Very interesting. So if we're looking for pitchers to give up barrels, the Cardinals may be a good opportunity to find, maybe a good opportunity to roster them as we go into the second half. Chicago Cubs, Orioles. This one has a pretty nasty forecast in it. Really bad rain chances around first pitch, and then it just kind of gives up and gets worse. So this is a postponed candidate. Montgomery versus Gausman. Montgomery has shown some great flashes of being ground ball guy. Gausman has shown, we don't know what he is. I hope he pans. I hope his second half is really good because the guy throws gas. He really does. Rockies Mets. John Gray versus Jake DeGrom. This one is another shitty weather situation, which affects Jake DeGrom's upside, which is a total bummer. DeGrom should be in a really good situation against the Rockies on the road here in a pitcher's park. They just aren't a very potent offense when they're facing quality pitching. So disappointing that we're going to probably have some too much weather risk, you know, almost a above 50% chance of rain throughout after 8 p.m. That's yucky. Don't like it. Especially with the possible start plus delay, that just doesn't work for me. So that's a bummer, but we'll see. Yankees, Red Sox, rain in the forecast here too. We're looking at a lot of rain over on the East Coast, guys. 30 to 40% chance in Fenway. Michael Pineda versus Drew Pomeranz. These games always a little bit less lower scoring than we want them to be for sure. And I don't think this one will be any exception. But I don't have a ton of interest, you know, really expensive Yankees bats versus Pomeranz. Meh. And then kind of overrated bats versus Pineda. Meh. I guess you could probably talk yourself into Mitch Moreland, but I don't think you have to. 15-game slate. Nationals-Reds, love this game. Gio Gonzalez versus Tim Adelman. Wind is blowing out. Great American Ballpark, 80 degrees. It's going to be a great day for baseball in a balmy 62% humidity in Cincinnati. Love this game. Love it. I think you're going to see a pretty high number for the Nats, over 5.5 runs here. Blue Jays-Tigers, Aaron Sanchez versus Justin Verlander. Aaron Sanchez got absolutely fucking destroyed by the Astros in his last start. They just demolished and demoralized the Blue Jays in that series. Verlander, massive heart contact issues. Josh is going to talk about it on the pod. I'm going to talk about it. So Blue Jays, you could get into them, I guess, but how many Blue Jays are worth rostering right now? I just don't know. I think I'd have to say it's just Kendrys Morales and Josh Donaldson for me. I, you know, try and hope that they maybe get you a home run because that's all that offense does anyway. Dodgers Marlins. This is an interesting series. McCarthy versus Straley. You know, Straley is a guy that could go either way in the second half. We could see more good stuff from him or we could see him start to fall off. And McCarthy, he just can't get past five innings. As soon as he does, if he makes that move like Rich Hill, then we got to start looking at him. But he really has not pitched that many innings recently. So even though the metrics are very good on McCarthy, it's hard to like a guy who will likely get yanked in the fifth. Not really that interested in bats in this one. You could talk yourself into the lefties. The lefties and the righty masher, Justin Turner. So, you know, the Seager, Turner, Bellinger 1-2-3 right there is always in play pretty much every night. Diamondbacks, Braves, 85 degrees down in Hotlanta. Guys, SunTrust Park is going to have some of the best weather. I live in the region. It is so fucking humid here. It is like bath humidity. Love it. Don't sleep on Atlanta being a great hitter's park in the next couple weeks. I think it's going to be. And the Braves are certainly interesting. A Freddie Freeman, 3.6 price tag. It's not going to stay that cheap. So we got to keep our eye on that. Find good spots to roster him. Against Taijuan Walker, you could talk me into it. I could see that. But Walker, he's been decent this year. R.A. Dickey on the other side of the mound. And Fern has some interesting statistics to tell you about R.A. Dickey that you may not have known. Phillies, Brewers, Nick Pivetta, Zach Davies. The battle of the mediocre 7K pitchers. Who gives up four runs first is my question. And it's probably going to be Pivetta. He's got an issue with right-handed bats. Now, here's the thing. He has had some really good outings recently. Really good. So the Brewers do strike out a lot. I can see Pivetta getting, you know, doing a six strikeout, six earned run thing here. So, you know, that kind of limits his upside. And Zach Davies, just underwhelming, boring, 14% strikeout rate. Boo. Paxton is going to the White Sox. Not in a trade. James Paxton and the Mariners are playing in Chicago. Wow, jeez, that could have been. I could have Woj bombed everybody and a false Woj bomb. And it wasn't even the NBA, it was MLB. What do you call that in MLB? We don't have a Woj. Is there a Woj of MLB? Somebody tweet that at me, please. All right. Mariners, White Sox, Paxton versus Shields. I like Paxton here. The White Sox were very good against lefties in the beginning of the year. They are trending in the wrong direction and striking out a lot. I think we could do that. And hey, James Shields loves home runs, so we could certainly start some Mariners bats. We didn't talk about it on the podcast, but remember that I said it here, and we'll pretend like I gave you good advice. Twins, Astros, Berrios, Morton. I love Jose Berrios, but geez, this is a tough way to start off after the All-Star break. Astros at home. They hit home runs. I don't know necessarily what to make of the Twins, except for that they are cheap, with the exception of Miguel Sano. Rangers Royals, Martin Perez versus Jason Hamill. I really like this game on the Royals side, and Josh is going to talk about that on the show. I think it's a great spot for the Royals, who are way underrated against left-handed pitching. Indians Athletics, Carlos Carrasco versus Sonny Gray. I still can't roster Sonny Gray. Please, someone give me a matchup where maybe it's an interleague thing where Gray pitches against himself or against the A's, who strike out a lot against righties, which Fern will talk about with Carrasco. You know, a nice night in Oakland. Oakland this time of year is a great park for pitchers. It's 65 degrees. It's cool. It's a great place. It's a big ballpark. So we certainly don't mind those West Coast places where the weather cools down a little bit as the season goes along. Tampa Bay versus the Angels, 81 degrees down in L.A. You know, that's actually a little bit interesting to me. Faria versus Nolasco. This is certainly a spot where the Rays could get a hold of Nolasco coming out of the break. He has a home run issue like all of those freaking Angels pitchers. And Faria, really excited to see what he does going down the stretch here. Giants, Padres, Johnny Cueto, Clayton Richard, two pitchers that are not that good. That's my analysis for that game. Two pitchers and two offenses that are not that good. That's all I got. I'm serious. That's pretty much it. That's all I can say about that. What do you want me to say? Cueto has been so underwhelming. His strikeouts just aren't there. Clayton Richard, eh. Ground ball stuff, eh. Fine. Giants, blah. Padres, strikeouts. You know, I mean, what do you want me to say? This is like, that's not a very exciting game. From a real life perspective, or a fantasy perspective. Now, do you have leverage in that game? Yes, you have leverage in that game. The game is terrible. There's leverage in it because no one wants to deal with it. But you got to have a lot of balls to roster Giants, Padres, and Petco Field. That's it, man. 15 games. I'm sorry that we don't have Vegas. Vegas is sleeping. They're all worried about the World Series of Poker out there. It's all that they keep doing, you know. Whatever. Hey, before I go too far into the player breakdown, I want to mention one thing. I want to be interacting with you guys more on Twitter, more in the Slack channel. As we go through this second half and you listen to the show, if you're listening to the show, send me your lineup logic, pick to click. I want to hear who you guys have hitting the ball out of the yard. I want to hear on a Twitter. Let's talk about it. Let's make some predictions. Let's have a little bit of fun here. So go ahead and throw me a tweet with a name, for example, I don't know, maybe Salvador Perez. Sometimes he hits home runs. Maybe he will be my pick to click. Hint, hint, hint. Love Sal Perez tomorrow night, by the way. Sal Perez, hashtag lineup logic pick to click. That's where we'll go with that, and I'll know that you want to send me your ideas about who's hitting dingers. It's going to be fun, you know, man? We're giving stuff away, too, man. We're giving stuff away. We had the loyalty. We had the Home Run Derby Pick'em, which was a huge win for Scott. Scott, loyal listener of the show, shout out to Scott. Well done, Scott. Pick Judge. Picked the perfect number of home runs he hit in the final round, too. That was excellent. So, you know, we're going to keep giving stuff away on this show, and lineup logic pick to click. As we go forward in July here. And let's jump into the player breakdown with my man, Josh Fernandez. Figure out who we love on this massive Friday slate. Who do you love? It is Friday, and that means that I got my man, none other than the Fernster, Professor Josh Fernandez, back. I had to say that for your wife. I hope your wife hears me call you the Fernster.
You know what? Like, if she hears that, it's going to be the abuse, the bullying for my wife is going to be taken to a whole nother level, Sean. I love it, though. It's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we both, just for everybody to be clear, we both get ripped on by our wives pretty easily because we kind of set ourselves up for it. But you were telling us, DeFern was telling a story the other day on Twitter about how his wife was coming after him for his for referring to himself as Fern. Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, I got my little corner here in our bedroom where I got my computer and my mic and everything set up. And she's over in the living room in earshot. And you and I were recording one night, and I said something to the tune of something really lame, like, oh, the Fernster says or whatever. And she just kind of slips her head in the room and looks at me and just shakes her head.
Yeah. Well, you deserve it.
And then I walk out like an hour later and she's like, dude, Fern. And I was like, babe, you know it. Come on. Don't mess around.
Don't come on. don't hang me out to dry here, honey.
Don't be hating.
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, man. All right. Well, Fern, it has been a kind of a sad and slow week. You know, I've been working on the railroad here, trying to figure out how, you know, to do marketing, which is DIY marketing stuff, which I'm much more comfortable talking about a slate. So I'm really glad that we got a slate to break down here. I don't know. What have you been doing with your time?
Yeah. I mean, other than starting summer school, we got half day summer school. So it's not a full work day. You know, you don't have to shed any tears for me.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, you know, I've been playing, some Texas Hold'em and blackjack online, and reminiscing about days of yore when I could actually play for real money. So just playing for some fake chips on the old what you call it? God damn it, Poker Stars.
Poker Stars.
Yeah, and just waiting patiently for baseball to come back like a true degenerate.
Fern, I got a Sean Cain fun fact. You ready for this?
Yeah, what's that?
I was in a commercial for Poker Stars.
Were you really?
Yeah, I'll have to tell you. My friend ran like a video agency, and Poker Stars reached out to them about an ad, and she was like, who do I know that has done acting stuff? And she texted me and was like, hey, are you available? And I was like, yeah. She's like, we just need a warm body. I'll send you. Anyway, that's offline.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah, praying.
People were texting me from Buffalo Wild Wings being like, Fox Sportsnet is on here. I'm pretty sure I just saw you. I'm like, oh, fuck.
God, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Dude, yeah, I'm just praying for the day when real money poker, online poker is back here in Maryland, but in all 50 states. And yeah. B, when that day happens and they start airing your commercial.
Oh, God damn it. No. Yeah, because I'm just going to get so many text messages. All right, we got baseball to talk about. Stop talking about the past here. Come on.
Let's talk about the future.
Yeah, we got nice 15 gamers coming up. Some interesting weather, though, to be concerned about. And, hey, guys, just so you know, Vegas has been really slow this week. They haven't really touched lines yet. My guess is that they'll start to get after it tonight. I thought maybe we'd see something today, but I'm not seeing any lines. Are you seeing any number of lines out there, Fern,
from Vegas? No, I don't see anything. I mean, normal places I look.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing anything, so that's kind of putting a little wrench in the machine here of our research. But, you know, we can make do with fan graphs and our just background knowledge and intuition.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if weather in Vegas indicates certain things that we miss or overlook just when the player breakdown here, then you guys make sure you adjust accordingly. But we got some interesting pitchers at the top of this slate. None of them who are, you know, wildly expensive. You're interested in Mr. Carrasco, though, as your stud, as opposed to my interest in Mr. DeGrom. So talk to me about Carrasco here.
Yeah. So first of all, you know, it's nothing against DeGrom, you know, and you're obviously going to, you know, touch on him in more detail. But I mean, Jake DeGrom is a certified stud and he's got a nice matchup, and I'll leave it at that. But I wanted to look at Carlos Carrasco taking on the Indians. And just for everyone's knowledge, you know, I like to talk about pitchers in the last 30 days time frame. You know, I think it's recent enough where we get a good feeling for what he's doing right now, but it's not too short where the sample size is too small. So in the last 30 days, you know, most of your starting pitchers are in the 35-ish range of innings pitched, 30-35 range of innings pitched. So, you know, that's a solid sample. So in the last 30 days, Carrasco, you know, I mean, he is who he is. You know, he's a dominating presence on the mound. You know, he's got amazing strikeout stuff. You know, he limits walks and, you know, generates a lot of swinging strikes. I mean, he's the guy who we know he is. And the guy who we know he is one who also can sometimes get hit around a little bit. But when he faces a team such as Oakland, that of the top five pretty much all season, sometimes number one K rate, you know, your mouth starts salivating at the possibilities of a 60 plus point outing. You know, Carrasco over this 30 day time frame has a 31.7% K rate, which is elite. And yeah. Oakland in that same time frame is top five, I believe. I got to pull that tab up here. Yeah, Oakland is third in MLB with a 26% K rate. So if you just use simple common sense there, you know, those two line up very well for a high upside outing as far as strikeouts are concerned. One thing that I'm trying to look at here as we move into the second half as well is outside the zone swing rate and zone inside the zone contact rate. And the reason I look at those is because if a pitcher can get guys to swing at pitches outside the zone, that's a huge advantage for him. And if a pitcher can restrict batters from making contact on his pitches inside the zone, again, a huge advantage for him. So when we look at the rate of pitches at which batters swing at outside the zone, right? Getting batters to swing at like breaking balls outside.
Right?
Yeah, chase pitches. Carrasco is fifth on the slate with a 34.5% rate in that category. And as far as inside the zone, he's pretty middle of the road. So the point that I'm trying to make with those two metrics, Sean, is that, you know, not only does he have great stuff, but he uses that great stuff to entice batters to chase pitches, which, again, you know, really solidifies his upside for strikeouts. So I feel really comfortable rostering Carrasco, and the price is really palatable too. He's only 9,500.
That's really good.
Yeah. So I think that he can give us an 11K type of outing for, you know, 15K less or 1500 less.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously, you know, right above him is DeGrom, and we're talking about, you mentioned it. He is, you simply stated, elite pitcher, great matchup. I like Carrasco for all the reasons you mentioned. I think one of the things that's probably underrated right now or overlooked, and I don't know how overrated or underlooked it is, but the Rockies offense, you know, even though they, for whatever reason, have seemed to be an interesting real life baseball team, as a fantasy baseball team, they're pretty underwhelming. And their offense as a whole has been pretty weak this year. I have to imagine if they played in a pitcher's park, that they would really struggle to hit the ball well and have a record this good. I think they certainly benefit from Coors Field. But DeGrom has the Rockies on the road in his home park, which is, we know, Citi Field, a great place for pitchers, a huge ballpark that plays really well for DeGrom. So, you know, he's going up against a team that owns a 22.6% K rate and currently has the lowest WRC plus in Major League Baseball against right-handed pitching. They're below the Phillies. They're below the Giants. they are with a 77 WRC plus at the break. Now, their WOBA is 320, but they only have a 155 ISO. They're not creating a lot of runs, especially on the road. It's just this team is not that good, and I think it's part of it. A lot of it comes from the fact that they only have a 28% hard hit rate. 29%, and it's been worse in the last 30 days. So DeGrom should be able to do a lot with this. I don't see this as a similar matchup to St. Louis. St. Louis was a solid middle of the road offense that was on a hot streak at his last start. It's not the same. It's just not the same situation. 28% K rate for DeGrom, 14% swinging strike rate, still elite. Shows me that there is room for double digit strikeouts there. The issue has been the batted balls, and we know that. It's his home run to fly ball rate, and his home run to fly ball rate is one of the highest on the slate at 19.6. And this isn't Ricky fucking Nolasco, but that's a Ricky Nolasco type number, right? Yeah. When those balls are getting hit up, he's getting hit hard, and he's got a 35% hard contact rate, which is about 5 points higher than you expect from a pitcher with this good of stuff. The home runs are an issue. He's probably going to give up a home run to a Charlie Blackman or a Nolan Arenado. But that's about it on this roster, to be completely honest with you. And I think one of the things that you love is that in Citi Field, his numbers get way, way better. His ERA drops down to 2.5 versus 4.5. His home run per nine goes from 2 down to 0.8. His K rate goes up to 30%. His walk rate goes up, strangely enough. I don't really know what to make of that, but I'll take it for those strikeout upside and the ability to limit runs. His xFIP and his Sierra also go down at home. So I really got to think that, this is one of the better matchups on the slate. I think DeGrom feel rested, feel comfortable. Was he in the All-Star stuff this year? I don't even think he was he?
I don't think so.
I don't think he was. So I think, you've got, I think you've got an opportunity, to, yeah, he wasn't.
Yeah, no, I got it up here. The 10 biggest snubs from the 2017 All-Star game.
Yeah.
And he, what a coincidence. Not only was it him, but also Carlos Carrasco.
There you go, baby. Rested, feeling good.
Whoa. What does that sound
like? And by the way, if you type in Jacob DeGrom, the news is going to show you that the Astros are interested in DeGrom.
Holy shit, dude. Oh, my God.
How fun would that be?
That's obscene.
I know. Oh, God. The Yankees and the Astros. Oh,
wow. Wow.
Anyway, all right. The trade deadline is going to be so fun.
Oh, yeah.
But DeGrom, I think he's a great spot. I like Carrasco as well. You obviously get the savings there, but I just think this is a good position for Carrasco. And, I know people have been kind of tilting him lately, but this feels like a good bounce back for a guy that throws hard, coming off of a little bit of extra rest. This is going to be a nice spot for him to, go deep, feel good, and rack up some strikeouts.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, I think Carrasco and DeGrom, they just feel really good in these two matchups. But if we want to look other places, I think that we can pivot to a couple guys. One guy that stands out to me is Jacob Faria of the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, what a standout young pitcher. He has just been ridiculously good. Just looking at some of his rates over the last month, and I'm just trying to sort my table here. He is right behind Jacob DeGrom in the WHIP category. DeGrom has a minuscule 0.79 WHIP, but Faria 1.00 on the dot WHIP, 2.25 ERA. I mean, just two really traditional standard statistics that show us just how good he's been. And if we dig deeper, it's even clearer that he is just an outstanding young pitcher. 24.8% K rate, just an 8.3% home run to fly ball rate. You know, he's doing a good job at limiting hard contact and generating a lot of soft contact. So he's doing a really good job, you know, in the near term. And, you know, since he was awarded his first start for the big club, you know, he hasn't looked back. So I love Faria, and he's drawing the Angels, and the Angels lately are a nice team to target. I think earlier in the year, their K rate was a lot lower than it is now. But over the last month, the Angels are actually, I think, surprising to some people with, you know, being in the top 10 for K rate at a 22.4% clip. But what really stands out to me more, which makes them a targetable offense, is that over the last month, their OPS as a team is only 673, which is 29th, just ahead of the Phillies. Really bad team OPS. Just shows you that, you know, they don't take walks, they don't, you know, hit for power. So when you got a pitcher who has the ability, the nasty stuff that Faria has, you know, he has a really high upside, you know, situation going against that team. Looking at the Angels a little bit more, you know, just in the areas of WRC plus, you know, WOBA, I mean, more evidence that they are a pretty inept offense. You know, they have moments where they pop like anybody, but on the whole, you know, we can really target them. The one thing, well, there's two things that kind of worry me about Faria in this situation. The first thing is obvious, and it's that he's a young pitcher, and young pitchers typically are, they typically struggle at holding runners, and the Angels love to steal bases. So, you know, if we're using him, you know, we're definitely going to cross our fingers that he doesn't have a lot of issues with, you know, letting, you know, batters get on base, because the Angels will steal bases. And the other thing that worries me with him is that, you know, in touching back on the outside, the zone swing rate and the zone contact rate, I am a little concerned here because he is, you know, among the worst of the slate. And I haven't looked at like what are like I haven't generated any constants yet. Like I haven't looked at what is an average outside the zone swing rate, you know, what's well below average, et cetera. But as far as the 30 pitchers on this slate, he is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's 24th in outside the zone swing rate. So he's not getting guys to chase pitches. And he has a 91.6% zone contact rate, which is 10th. So guys are, you know, when they're swinging at his pitches, I mean, they are making contact with him. But like I said, he is doing a really good job at limiting hard contact and generating a lot of soft contact. So that's why I put him in to the pivot category, not as a really chalky stud. I do think that one day we will be talking about him in the same breath as guys like DeGrom, you know, Carrasco. He's not quite there yet. He just needs to polish his game up a bit. But you know what? When you get an opponent like the Angels, and the guy you worry most about is like Cole Calhoun, you know,
right.
I'll take it.
I mean, you got to worry. The one thing I think you got to worry about is the possible return of Trout. Now, I don't know necessarily what the status of that is. You know, there's talk of him coming back, but you know, I mean, are you worried about Mike Trout on his first day back?
Dang, man, I didn't even think about that. Wow, Mike Trout. Okay, according to a few sources here, yeah, according to SI, Mike Trout will return to the team's lineup after the All-Star break. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, you know what? I mean, that does concern me, obviously. But, like, that's one guy. I mean, it is Mike Trout.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that, Sean?
I don't know. I mean, you get the guy coming off of his first, you know, the wrist.
He's missed 39 games.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a lot there. I think Faria could get around him. He's pitched, you know, in tougher matchups. He's pitched in a lot of really good games. He's been good. I think one of the things is that I just don't know. He hammers the zone, and in certain situations, it works really well for him. I've watched him pitch. And in certain situations, if certain teams who like to hit pitchers who, you know, he's got a nasty combination of classic fastball, slider change, right? He doesn't throw a lot of other stuff, but he's got really high quality stuff in those three. He hammers the zone, and if he can get a ump that's on his side and he can get a couple guys to whiff, then he can really build up a good head of steam and keep some short innings. But, you know, if he's got teams that are waiting on pitches, they're not chasing, sometimes it scares me. I don't know. I love him. I feel like he's one of the guys that I want to get a much larger sample size on before we can figure out exactly who he is as a pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. So, yeah, well,
I like him in this spot. I think it's a great ballpark. The weather is going to be some of the coldest on the slate. The rest of that roster is terrible.
Right.
So I like it. I like that call.
Yeah, but definitely want to limit it to GPP.
Yeah, plays. For sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I think Paxton is going to be popular, and Fern, he's another guy that I like him. I was bearish on him for a while because I didn't trust what I was seeing in the kind of the trending up. And I was bearish when other people were bullish because I just was worried that hard hit rate was going to catch up with them. And I missed a number of different starts that featured 9 strikeouts just because I was scared. By the way, one of those starts came against Los Angeles. Well, not the 9 strikeout start. 3 strikeouts against Los Angeles, only 1 earned run. I think Paxton has a nice matchup. He's got the White Sox coming to town. Now, we were all like shaking in our boots about the White Sox versus left-handed pitching at the beginning of the year because they were basically like unstoppable. Like they were really pretty excellent. And, you know, they're still, I think, good, but they have dropped significantly in the rankings. They were top 5 for a while, Fern. Guess where they are now?
Where?
They're at a 29% hard hit rate, which puts them at a WRC plus of only, well, a WRC plus of 114. Okay, so that's good. They're still top 10 in WRC plus, but they're bottom 10 in hard hit rate. And in the last 30 days, those numbers continue to kind of drop off and show that they're a little bit more average. They're 22nd in WRC plus in the last 30 days. So I think they're regressing a little bit as it comes to left-handed pitching. The one thing is they are striking out a ton as a team recently, and they're striking out in particular in the last 30 days against left-handed pitching at a 27% strikeout rate. That's fucking filthy. This is like, we're going after Arizona because they swing at everything against lefties. Well, so do the White Sox. You know, I think that unfortunately they have a bunch of guys who love to hit lefties, and sometimes they're just not doing it as well as they should be. So enter Paxton, Jimmy Paxton, who we know had some struggles. He had some hard contact problems. He had some batted ball issues in the last couple starts coming off of injuries. But last 2 starts, he didn't give up any home runs, which is great news. You love that. His hard contact went down from the 40s and the 50s down to, in the last 3 starts, Fern, 26, 29, and 30%. It seems like he reeled in whatever issue. Now, he was playing some teams that don't hit the ball that hard, but it seems to me like he reeled in whatever issue it was that was causing him to get hit so hard. And you know what it is? Wow, look at this. I love it when we uncover this kind of shit. He added his changeup back into the mix. He wasn't throwing his changeup in those 2 starts after he came off of the DL. And those starts coming off of the DL, he wasn't throwing his changeup. Maybe he didn't feel comfortable. Maybe he wasn't, you know, something wasn't working for him. whatever the case may be, he adds the changeup back in. You've seen three high-quality starts from him, multiple Ks, so he seems like he's back to what we expect from him. You add this leverage idea that people think the White Sox are pretty good against left-handed pitching. The fact that Carrasco is right there at the exact same price, I think that people love Paxton in this situation, but I think he may go a little bit less lower owned than we expect from a guy with a 27% strikeout rate, 13% swinging strike rate. And, we know he has the ability. He's one of these guys. He's got double digit strikeout ability. And the way he's limiting home runs really, really kind of makes me like him in this spot. So I think Paxton is definitely an option for our tournament lineups as well. Cash games, some people, I think if you really have an offense that you want to get after, you could go to him in cash games, but I don't think you have to.
Are you back to
trusting him?
Yeah, no, I completely, am right on board with what you were saying. First about the White Sox, that people are still of the mindset that they're this like devastating, untouchable team against lefties. And that plays into, the advantage for people who know that, there is mean regression, and the White Sox, though good against lefties, are not a team where you just need to completely fade that starting pitcher, especially when someone like Paxton's on the mound. And you said it, man, he's using that changeup again. And when you're throwing the ball like he is, what is he, like a 97, 98, sometimes 100 mile an hour fastball kind of pitcher. I mean, he throws gas. Big league hitters are, 100 mile an hour pitch. I mean, I'm not saying that, it's untouchable. I mean, it's an amazing part of anyone's repertoire, but big league hitters are going to square up on it once they get a read on it and see it a couple times. And if you don't have that changeup to keep batters off balance, that 100 mile an hour pitch to a lot of guys starts looking like a 90 mile an hour pitch. But when you mix in that changeup, man, that 100 mile an hour pitch starts looking like 110 miles an hour. So if Paxton's got that back in his repertoire, and he's shaking off the rust, and he clearly has, hasn't given up a home run in his last two outings. In his last three outings, he has 20 strikeouts in, I think, about 20 innings, about a strikeout per inning. So he's looking good, man. I feel good about him. I'm back to trusting him and hoping that he keeps this thing going. And before you know it, I think we're going to be seeing a 5-digit salary because he's got a ton of upside anytime out. That's for sure.
I would agree with that. It's definitely time that his pricing jumped, although I will take it.
Oh yeah, totally.
All right.
Yeah.
We got a couple hot takes down here, a couple tournament arms that, no, I can't be comfortable with any of these guys, but Fern, I don't know about this one. The one that you got, this, my friend, this is a screaming hot take. This is Skip Bayless heat.
Skip Bayless. Oh, boy. So I am going to offer to you guys R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey against Arizona. Now, here's the thing with Dickey. Is he's been ridiculously good the last like month or so. I mean, just shockingly good. Every time out, you just think this is the one where he's going to get blown up, and he doesn't. I mean, what did he just do against the Nationals?
He just destroyed the Nationals. I had a lot of Nationals, and I was like, this is the one. Daniel Murphy at bat. It's going yard. Nope. They only scored two runs off of him.
Yeah. Now, there was that one outing back in mid-June where the Nats destroyed him. But other than that, I mean, this is insane, Sean. In his last one, two, I mean, if you exclude that June 13th outing, and just go from June 8th on, there are five starts there. He's given up four earned runs in 7, 14, 21, 27, 34 innings pitched. I mean, that's insane. Like, he is on a heater right now. And, if we're going to be using him, hopefully, that's this All-Star break didn't break any of his rhythm. But that knuckleball, man, I mean, it's biting. It's moving around like crazy. It's looking like a, you know, like a whirling dervish out there. You know, I was reading an article about him, and he was talking. This article was from like 5 or 6 years ago, and he was talking about how the knuckleball really starts to be more effective in like the early to mid summer for a variety of reasons. You know, I mean, and he was talking about things like barometric pressure and, you know, humidity and air quality.
Density.
I mean, it's crazy, but you know, I mean, he was saying it back in 2011 and it's, you know, apparent right now that it's an effective pitch because that's pretty much what he throws like 80% of the time. So Dickey, I mean, I don't think we need to talk much about him. If the knuckleball is working, then he's working. I mean, when we look at, outside the zone swing rate, I mean, he is doing a good job of getting guys to swing. You know, guys aren't making contact inside the zone on his pitches. So, you know, he's doing a good job lately. But the problem is that he's facing Arizona, and we do have a lot of concerns when rostering pitchers against the D-backs. No, there is a plus and a minus to this situation. The plus is that they're not playing at Chase. And when Arizona goes on the road, you know, all of their hitting statistics or offensive statistics drop a bit. But they are playing, what the hell is the Braves ballpark called again?
SunTrust.
There it is. And SunTrust so far has proven to be a hitter's paradise for lefties. Right. So, you know, I do have some fear when it comes to Jake Lamb and, you know, some of the other lefties. Like, I mean, I guess, I don't know, Daniel Descalso and what's his face? I just drew a blank on his name, the left-handed outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that worried about Gregor Peralta.
Yeah, David Peralta.
Like, and Jake Lamb doesn't really like breaking stuff, so.
He's more of a fastball guy.
Yeah, and I don't. It's weird. Nobody's gonna play him.
Yeah, I mean, no one's gonna play him. And you see that price? I mean, he's $7,400, and that is what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He's the 8th cheapest pitcher on the slate.
Right.
And you just look at his game logs, and he's just putting up crazy numbers. I mean, 43, 31, 46, 49, 9. And then 52. I mean, so if we can get 45 points from Dickey at 7,400 on low ownership, I mean, you know,
and if you can do it against Ryan Zimmerman, Anthony Rendon, Bryce Harper, and Daniel Murphy, I think you can do it against Jake Lamb.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally. And you know, I obviously, you know, there's other. I mean, there's Goldie. You know,
right,
but. I don't know. You know, if you throw him out there in a couple GPPs, you know, if you, you know, enter multiple times, or you like to do like you and I, you know, we like the low dollar multi entries. I love the 3 max. You like to get a couple in the $2. What you call it? I can't remember.
Yeah, super sack fly. You can just kind of get a lot of the nice thing is you play a lot of the different ideas that you've been toying with, and you're. You're trying, you know, you're testing your different theories and things like that. And it's fun. Sometimes they pan out.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at those 7K guys, I mean, you know, there's a couple that stand out. He stands out a lot to me, but you've got one that is tickling your fancy a bit. Huh, Sean?
Well, I guess this is the hard part. All right. Mike Montgomery for the Cubbies going into Camden. I just wish the freaking Orioles in this situation had more lefties on their team. Like, I really wish they had more lefties. Like, it would be a great situation if they had lefties. They don't. So it's a little bit more concerning. But Montgomery is actually, like, quietly an elite ground ball pitcher. Okay? And listen to some of these batted ball statistics. Okay? He has about a 60% ground ball rate right now in the year, 59%, which goes up to 63% against left-handed pitching. And against left-handed bats, he's a 3.6-1 ground ball to fly ball ratio. Righties, it's 2.2-1. 2.2-1 is absolutely elite. He's only given up 4 home runs on the year, okay? And he's only got a 30% hard contact rate. Now, it jumps up to 34% against right-handers, and it drops down to 26 against lefties. Obviously, he's got a problem with righties as it relates to, you know, his splits. He is elite against lefties. I guess that's just the best way to put it. He is a kind of a platoon guy. If they'll let him go 6 innings, you know, to get the good innings out of him. But they also have no problem yanking him. So you do have that kind of inning or worry that, you know, how many innings is he going to have? But you get the Orioles offense against left-handed pitching. They're better against left-handed pitching, no doubt. They are certainly better against lefties than they are against righties. But Fern, you know this. These guys are not elite against anybody right now. Last 30 days, 24% strikeout rate, 66 WRC plus with a 274 WOBA against left-handed pitching. And enter this guy who is just this intensely boring, underwhelming ground ball pitcher. You know, you compare that to their season-long marks, it's not much different. 25% strikeout rate to left-handed pitching and an 87 WRC plus, well below average. Orioles just really aren't inspiring any confidence. Yes, you do worry that a guy like Montgomery could get hit hard by John Scope, Manny Machado, etc. But I just don't see a problem with the rest of this roster, and I think that that's why he's so appealing to me, because he's boring. And he has the possibility of just kind of managing the game and not getting blown up. You know, there's upside in that. You know, 10 points for a win and 10 points for a win in a quality start. You know, that, I don't know. It seems like a good idea, especially with Gausman on the opposite side of the hill. Who the fuck knows what you're going to get from Gausman these days? You could get 10 strikeouts and 5 earned runs. So I think Montgomery's in an interesting position. It's risky. I definitely want to stay towards the top tier on this slate. I think you're right. I think Faria is about my floor. That might be the lowest that I go.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily do too much with Dickey or Montgomery, but if I find an offense that I really, really want, then maybe I will.
Yeah, no, and before we just, like, you know, do a few quick hits of anyone else that stands out to us, just on the Orioles, I mean, they just don't put pressure on any opponents. This lineup, I mean, you know, the Orioles do have that cloud hanging over them that they are this, like, sleeping giant of just elite power potential. You know, they're like a dormant volcano. I mean, like, Machado the other day had the double dong outing against the Twins, against whatever the hell that rookie pitcher Joker's name was.
Right.
You know, and I think that might still be lingering in people's heads, you know, oh, Machado double dong, the O's crushed. But they just don't put pressure on anybody. You know, they have the worst, they're tied with the D-backs for the worst walk to strikeout ratio against left-handed pitchers, on the season. And they don't steal bases. They don't really hit for power against lefties, believe it or not. You know, just a 729 team OPS and just a 162 ISO and just a 90 WRC plus against left-handed pitchers on the season. So I do think that they are a targetable offense with left-handed arms. And when you're, you know, I mean, this is a dart throw, everybody. You know, like, obviously Sean isn't recommending Montgomery, and I'm not recommending Dickey as, like, you know, pieces to build around. But if you're trying to get some 6 stacks in there, you're going to have to save money somehow. And this is just a solid upside outing for Montgomery.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's a really good way to say it. all right, let's talk sticks here, because we definitely have some offenses.
Well, and just,
that are
before we big. Talk sticks, I just want to really just a couple other guys that stand out to me. And you know, some of these might be palatable to you. Some of them might be a little, throw up in your mouth kind of stuff. But Gio against the Reds is interesting to me. I kind of like you mentioned him just now, Gausman against the Cubs. You know, he seems like he's getting right. And then I kind of like Charlie Morton against the Twins. He looked really good against the Blue Jays in his return. Now, granted, the Blue Jays could have been completely demoralized after getting dumped on by the Astros 19-1. But he was looking really good. And then I know Verlander has been pretty rough, but the Blue Jays, you know, I just mentioned them. They're just, their offense is just not that devastating. And Verlander always has in his back pocket an elite outing. So Verlander seems a little interesting to me as a pivot. And last, and this is a little, this might be a little crazy, but he's pitched so well this year. And they do strike out a little bit, you know, is Dan Straley against the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, the Dodgers have cooled off a bit after they were like the hottest team in baseball back in June. They're still a very dangerous ball club, but Straley, man, I mean, he has been outstanding this year, and I think that he might be a decent play in the mid 8K range as far as ownership goes.
Yeah, I think those are interesting takes. One of the offenses that I want to include here, though, Josh, you may have to pay down. I really like the Nationals, and I like the Nationals because they are going into a great ballpark. This ballpark, man, Great American Ballpark has been one of the best ballparks for home runs in baseball this year. The Nationals are going in there, and they're getting Tim Adelman to start. Now,
Friend of the podcast,
Timmy Adelman, and it is going to be a balmy July day in Cincinnati, 80 degrees, humidity, wind blowing out there. Down in southern Ohio, so we are going to go right after the Nats. And here's the thing about Adelman. As much as we have loyalty to him, Adelman has a fly ball issue, okay? And when you're facing a team that is currently second in WRC Plus on the season, to right-handed pitching, or second in the National League, I should say, with a 109 WRC Plus against righties, and a 4.5% barrel rate, okay? I'm looking at Casey Bogusław's All-Star Break updated barrel charts. Shout out to Casey Bogusław, MLB Barrel Alert, Row Baseball, go follow. The Nats are really in a position where they could just start, they could hit a, this could be a two or three home run lineup for them. Home run to fly ball rate for Adelman is 17.9. He's got a 2.0 home run per nine. And it's definitely the lefties at home. And I mentioned this, you know, I mentioned this in one of my YouTube videos, by the way, in pitcher on batting selection. Go over to the YouTube channel, search for my name, Sean Kane, MLB DFS strategy. You can find it there. But it is the lefties that are smashing him. His xFIP against lefties is 6.0. His K to walk ratio is 5%. His home runs per nine goes up to 2.3. And from what I can tell, we have at least three lefties in this lineup that I gotta love. Goodwin at the top, he's cheap. Murphy and Harper, that's easy, right? The question then is are you gonna go Rendon or are you gonna go Zimmerman? My hope is honestly that somehow, someway, Adam Lind finds his way into the lineup, because that's another lefty that may go overlooked. And I will play Adam Lind all day at first base because he's cheap. And he smashes. So no problem with the Nats in Great American Ballpark tomorrow night.
Yeah, totally. I love that play. Yeah. You know, if you can get a right-handed heavy opponent, Adelman is a pretty solid pitcher, but the Nats just can throw so many lefties at you, and it's not even fair in this matchup. I agree. I think it's going to be a multi-home run outing for the Nationals. Looking at the other side of things here, we got the Rays visiting L.A., taking on the Angels, and Ricky Nolasco is on the mound. And, you know, I just – Ricky Nolasco, like, what can we say? I mean, he's just human batting practice. You know, he just gives up so much hard contact, so many fly balls. The home run to fly ball rate, you know, is high. We can definitely target him, you know, with pretty much any team. But when the Rays are coming to town, you know, you really got to take notice. So just looking at the Rays splits against right-handed pitching, and I'm just waiting for this screen to load here. As far as WRC Plus goes, I mean, you got guys like Lomo, Souza, Dickerson, even Malik Smith, all of whom have elite WRC Pluses, you know, over 136 and above. So, I mean, that just right there, like four guys who really stand out to you that you know are going to be in the lineup and all offer, you know, home run upside. And then with Smith, obviously the stolen base upside, you know, even looking at their OPS, like a more traditional statistic, the Lomo, Souza, and Dickerson all have OPSs over 900 against against right-handed pitchers. Malik Smith follows them right up with an 845 OPS. So I feel like you can start a stack with those guys against Nolasco. And then, of course, you know, like the typical supporting cast, guys like Wilson Ramos, you know, maybe you can get a little silly and use like Shane Peterson or Peter Borges, though Borges is better against lefties. Maybe our boy Taylor Featherston. And then, of course, Evan Longoria is always rosterable against anyone. He's not having the most stupendous year, but, you know, he's a consistent run producer in the middle of that lineup. But I don't think that we really need to nitpick this one that much. You know, he is not a good pitcher in Nolasco, and the Angels bullpen is also, you know, a targetable group of arms. Now, my one concern, though, with the bullpen situation going into this slate is that everybody is rested. You know, so I think that we might want to wait to start targeting bullpens again until, you know, maybe a week in to the second half when guys start getting fatigued after, you know, several nights of going at it.
I think that's fair. That makes a lot of good sense to me. But I love Nolasco's ability to just give up a ton of home runs, you know, and that is absolutely something that, you know, the Rays can do. They hit the ball really, really hard.
I like the way you said that. I love his ability to give up home runs.
Yeah, he's got a unique ability.
Ricky, get into my office. I got to talk to you. Listen, buddy, you're doing a great job of giving up home runs. Doing a real stand-up job. Keep it up.
What other conversations can they have in LA?
Right.
It's just the whole pitching staff is like, guys, I just want to say we're going to keep throwing the ball. The goal is to give up fly balls. That's what we want. We're a fly ball team. It's like, I know everybody else is going to the ground.
Hey, no, all the hitters we got it. Those rocks out there in center field are getting pretty lonely. We need some balls out there. Do a good job, Ricky. Come on now.
What do they talk about? Because all of these guys have home run problems.
They really do.
All right. There's some interesting pivots on this slate, too. And I think we got to look at the Brewers. Okay. The Brewers are going to go against Nick Pivetta. Now, Nick Pivetta has had his moments where he has been good. We all remember Nick Pivetta versus the Red Sox. That was a really tilting game. He just had a really solid two outings against the Mets and the Padres. But even in the Padres game, he gave up three earned runs on home runs. So, you know, nine Ks, but three home runs. And he enter, you know, a team that has way more power than the Padres against right-handed pitching. The Brewers, you know, who are just smoking the ball, 33% hard contact rate, 20% home run to fly ball rate, with a fly ball rate of 32%, which actually isn't that high. But basically what it says to me is that if they hit the ball in the air, it's going out of the park. You know, and that aligns with what we understand about their offensive style, a 198 ISO and a 98 WRC plus. They hit home runs. That's what they do. They smash the baseball, just like the Rays. They're a great fantasy offense. You know, so I think we can go to the Brewers here in this situation against Pivetta. One of the things that I like to exploit about Pivetta is that, you know, his splits to righties and lefties would indicate you want Eric Thames and Travis Shaw. Well, not really. The home run issue is really against righties. So while Eric Thames and Travis Shaw should be able to, you know, take advantage of the fact that, you know, Pivetta can struggle with walks and Pivetta has a, you know, he definitely struggles with walks to lefties. I think that what we really have to consider is the righties here. So we're going straight at Ryan Braun, Domingo Santana, John VR, if he's in the leadoff spot, but I have no idea what they've been doing with John VR and Eric Sogard. The thing about the Brewers these days is they've got weird lineups. I feel like their lineup changes every single day. But if you can get VR, Braun, you know, I think Shaw, Santana, those guys are all interesting. And don't sleep on, you know, some cheapies. If you need a Keon Broxton or something like that, I have no problem with that as well.
Don't forget about Steven Vogt, too.
Yeah, this is true. Steven Vogt would be a really good spot. He's got a 200 ISO against lefties. I just think you have to take advantage of some of these reverse splits guys. And, you know, God, if Jesus Aguilar for some reason in there. Oh, God.
He is definitely a friend of the pod.
Jesus Aguilar, friend of the pod. The Brewers, I think, in general, are friend of the pod.
They are, man. I completely agree. They are so friendly. It's insane.
I love the Brewers.
And you know what? My favorite batting stance to, like, joke around, mimic, is all-time Craig Counsell's, and he's their manager.
There you go.
Smelling his armpit while he's up at the dish.
Yeah. That's nice.
You know
what I'm
talking about. If you don't know Craig Counsell's batting stance, go do a Google image search, and you will be delighted.
All I can think about right now is when we were watching that that home run derby. And the massive, massive leg kick that Gary Sanchez has. I didn't realize he had that much leg kick.
Oh, dude, he's like the guy on my softball team that we bat fifth. He just, like, he kicks that leg like, you know, he's showing off or something, you know?
Yeah, it's like a fucking Heisman pose.
Right? It's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Brewers, I'm going after Thames and Shaw. Very reasonably priced, 3.5, 3.6. But I am absolutely including Braun and Santana. I'm balancing my lefties with my righties, and I have no problem, like I said, with John VR at the top of the lineup. But I don't know who you're going to get in that leadoff position because we're getting weird Brewers lineup. So I wouldn't necessarily – I would pencil in the core three Brewers there, but I would wait and see who else you get based on lineup construction.
Yeah, buddy. Nice call. Yeah, I like the Brewers. Yeah, you and I were kind of going back and forth for a minute there with Rays and Brewers, and I'm right there with you. I love them. One team that I think is kind of a little curveball here on some of us might be the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're taking on Mike Leake at home. They're in Pittsburgh. And here's the thing. You know, Pittsburgh is always low-owned. And, you know, it's not like that should be a surprise or an injustice by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Pittsburgh as a team is they're not that fearsome. But what they do make up for with a lack of just pure power is they are just professional, high quality hitters, you know, just up and down that lineup. There's just so many guys that can just keep the train moving. I mean, we just saw the other day, I mean, that outing against the Cubs and Lester was just, I mean, oh my gosh, it was, that was crazy. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, that's just what Pittsburgh can do. I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to regularly go out there and score 10 runs in an inning, but they have the ability to keep innings going. And it's because they just don't strike out. they just don't strike out. They make good contact and they can run. You know, they put a lot of pressure on pitchers with their ability to run. Now, here's the thing with Mike Leake. Mike Leake, you can't really run on him. Even as a right-handed pitcher, he does limit base runners of stealing bags. So he's good at that. But the pitching side of things, he's kind of struggling lately. Pitching to a 4.25 ERA and 1.45 whip, they're not terrible, but they indicate that this is a guy who is not at his best right now. When you dig a little deeper, you can see a few red flags that stick out. First of all, home run to fly ball rate, 23.5% for Leake. That is just behind Tim Adelman. He's fourth on the list of this slate in the last month. And if you exclude Aaron Sanchez, who's only thrown an inning and two thirds, he's third behind Pineda and Adelman, just ahead of James Shields. So when you hit a fly ball against Mike Leake, there's a 1 in 4 chance it's getting out of the yard. And then the other thing with Leake is he doesn't strike anybody out. I mean, 12.9% K rate and an 8.1% walk rate. I mean, that walk rate's not even that great, you know. And then when you factor in his 12.9% K rate, I mean, he is the kind of pitcher that if he's not inducing ground balls, he's going to get beat up pretty bad. Just an 8.2% swinging strike rate is minuscule. Here's something that really, really stands out to me and makes me really like the Pirates a lot. As I mentioned before, and as many of us know, the Pirates are a high contact, low strikeout ball club. And Mike Leake's zone contact percentage is 93.3%, which is third highest behind John Gray and Ricky Nolasco. So when he throws balls in the zone, guys hit him. I mean, they make contact with him. So he is a very hittable pitcher. And if he draws a team that has a high strikeout number, you know, maybe he has the ability to rack up a few Ks and dodge some bullets. But against the Pirates, you know, I never will recommend the Pirates as like a stone cold lock of a stack. But if you're trying to get a little contrarian, or you're trying to look for, you know, maybe a mini stack, the Pirates are a really good place to start. You know, I feel like they're kind of like the Red Sox in that they're not that sexy of a team to use.
Right.
But they're never going to really kill you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that it's fair to call them that. I mean, they're fillers, right? They're roster fillers. And if Mike Leake got blown up by the freaking, Pirates, or no, the Marlins in his last start. And I mean, Marlins are kind of a mediocre offense. There's some nights where they're excellent. There's some nights where they're not that good. So I don't mind it. I think I'm with you on your pivot stack here. I love the Royals versus Perez, and I'm going to let you talk about that because I think that's a great – I'm going to love that stack in a lot of spots.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is a game stack possibility here in the Toronto-Detroit game, okay? So you have two guys who are two of the slate leaders in hard contact rate allowed in Verlander and Aaron Sanchez. That title, by the way, belongs to Ricky Nolasco. Verlander, though, is a 37% hard contact rate. Sanchez just returned, and he got absolutely destroyed. He's only allowing a 28% hard contact rate. But in that start against Houston, we saw he has a propensity to give up some fly balls. His fly ball rate jumped up. He has a home run to fly ball rate right now of 20%. Point being is this guy has the ability to get knocked around, and as does Verlander. They both kind of have their hard-throwing guys who have home run issues. So I have no problem looking at this one as a game stack. You know, Verlander has had a couple good starts recently, But the hard contact issues continue to be a problem. Toronto, I don't know. They're not very inspiring, but I think there's some pieces that you can get excited about. They have a 92 WRC plus against righties in the last couple of days. You could certainly go there and find yourself your pair of, you know, maybe a Kendrys Morales and Josh Donaldson, just kind of as a little bit of white, a little bit of Blue Jays hedging to make sure that you get it. But I think at the core of what you want to do is you probably want to go after Sanchez here. And when you're looking at Sanchez, you know, we know this guy throws the ball really fast. Okay. But that is resulting in some really, really interesting numbers from righties. Only an 8% strikeout rate to right-handed bats right now on the season. Now, there's not a lot of – it's not a massive sample size, but he's just not striking enough people out. His xFIP is elevated to right-handers. You've got a Detroit team that continues to be one of the top teams in hard hit rate against righties and lefties. You know, we know who those classic characters are. It's Alex Avila, who is so underpriced right now. So I love Alex Avila as a lefty there. I love Ian Kinsler in this spot. And I, of course, have no problem going to Justin Upton and JD Martinez, who we know are just – they're just there to hit home runs. It's what they do. And I think that you could pair these rosters really nicely. You go catcher Avila, first base Morales or Smoke, whatever you want to do there. Second, Kinsler. Third, Donaldson. And then you grab two outfielders. And maybe you add an Ezekiel Carrera or a cheap Toronto outfielder that's up in the lineup. Maybe a Steve Pierce or whoever's, you know, I don't know if they're going to continue to bat Jose Bautista leadoff. Some people love it. I think it's stupid because I just don't think Jose Bautista adds that much to the offense at the top of their order, and it hasn't done anything.
I would rather have Donaldson bat leadoff.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know, like...
Bautista's, I mean, Bautista, I think, is much better in the two-hole.
Yeah, why wouldn't you have... I guess, I don't know, maybe they're just trying to get as many plate appearances to their best batters. But
well, I don't
just
know if he's their best batter anymore these
that's
days,
my,
as far as a hitting,
that's what I'm saying.
You know? You know what's interesting, Sean, too, is... do you ever look at... I came across, like, a while ago... And I haven't really talked about it that much, but hard minus soft, if you subtract soft percentage from hard percentage, it's kind of it's kind of like ISO, where you subtract average from slugging, you know, and you just get a pure look at like a guy's power. Well, if you subtract soft rate from hard rate, you get a pure look at a guy's ability to hit the ball hard. So the higher, the better for batters, and the higher, the worse for pitchers. Hard minus soft for this slate. Number one, Ricky Nolasco by a huge margin. And then number two, Justin Verlander.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's getting hit hard.
Yeah. And if they're not hitting him hard, they're still hitting medium contact.
Yeah.
You know,
I hear you.
So
I think we got to look at it.
Yeah,
you know,
I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. I think that's a really stackable game, you know, on both sides for sure. And I also think with Aaron Sanchez, he's very similar to Nick Pivetta. They both are gas throwing righties. But the problem with them, you know, they do well against lefties because they can run the ball in on lefties.
Right.
But with the right-handed batters, I mean, if we said it before with Paxton, you know, if you don't have like a good off-speed pitch, then who gives a shit if you're throwing 100 miles an hour, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
These, you know, maybe it works for you in AAA or AA, but not up here, you know?
I hear that. Yeah. That makes a lot of good sense.
Yeah. So the Royals against Martin Perez, we were talking about the Royals either a week ago or 2 weeks ago, but the people have to get out of their heads that the Royals are not a good offense. That was early on in the season, you know, and last year, the last couple of years when they've been on their World Series runs and whatnot, they were a very soft hitting offense. And things have changed over the last couple months. The Royals are are up there with teams as far as being able to hit the ball hard. They're seventh in ISO over the last 30 days with a 212 number. Wow. I mean, they have a higher ISO than the Cubs, the Indians, the Rays, the Reds, the Yankees, the D-backs, the Nationals. I mean, they're hitting the ball hard. And I don't think that people are hip to it yet. And
no.
Yeah, and so I think that that is still a huge edge that we can get. And when you get a guy like Martin Perez, who, yeah, he has a tendency to be able to generate ground balls. But other than that, he doesn't really do anything well. You know, he is the kind of pitcher that can get hit hard, you know, and teams can rally on him. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys. You know, I just referred to the hard minus soft metric, and he has a 21.7 number, which is fourth worst on the slate. Gives up a whopping 34.9% hard contact, which is bad. That's a lot of hard contact.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, his ground balls are high. He doesn't give up a lot of fly balls, but what he makes up for as a stackable pitcher and not giving up a lot of fly balls, he makes up for in getting, you know, a high tendency to have rallies against him. And the Royals are a team that can rally on a pitcher. You know, they if they get hot, you know, they can turn that lineup over. Looking at the Royals individually against left-handed pitchers, one guy that has been surprising to me all year, every time I look at the Royals, is Brandon Moss. He's got that reverse split thing down pat. I mean, this is a left-handed power bat with a 200 WRC plus and a 1141 OPS against left-handed pitchers. So I like Brandon Moss, even though he does hit from the bottom of the lineup. You know, he's got a lot of power potential, a lot of strikeout potential too, 34.5% K rate, which is horrific against lefties. But like I said, Perez doesn't really strike anyone out. So I think Moss might be a nice play. And then, of course, there's the usual suspects, you know, Hosmer, Sal Perez, Moustakas, Merrifield, Gordon, Bonifacio, and I'm not Gordon. Don't use Alex Gordon. Lorenzo Cain. So I think the Royals are gonna blow up Mr. Perez. And the other thing too is that this game, let me double check, it's in Kansas City. I was gonna say if it was in Texas, we'd get that 95 degree Texas heat, but KC, you know, I mean, I don't know, it's a pitcher's park, but like I said, like the Royals, they don't need to hit home runs in order to put up a lot of fantasy points. They can double you to death.
Yeah, and so I think it was interesting. We're looking at this the last 4 weeks, so you can, you know, you're talking about this hot streak that they've been on, specifically against left-handed pitching. Sal Perez has a 579 WOBA and a 417 ISO.
Oh, my God.
Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Brandon Moss, right there behind him, is one of the highest WOBAs. Now, Brandon Moss's home run hasn't really done it. You know, he hasn't really done the home run thing very well. He's only got a 91 ISO, but a 385 WOBA indicates that he's part of that, like, base running machine that you're talking about. You know, Jorge Bonifacio, he has been a home run or bust guy all season long. And, you know, I just don't think that people are hip to this. I totally agree. If you're going to stack the Royals, though, guys, you have to include Sal Perez. It's like you're trying to stack, you know, it's like trying to stack the Astros without including Carlos Correa. You're just kind of doing yourself a disservice.
Well, and you got to love those teams. You got to love it when you can stack a team and feel very confident in using their catcher or their second baseman or their shortstop.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So when you refer to Sal or you refer to Correa, you know, or, you know, I don't know, like
Alex Avila
or Daniel Murphy on the Nats, like you love to get that high upside from those traditionally weaker, you know, positions.
Right. Right.
I mean, Perez is their best hitter, you know?
Yeah, it's a really good point. All right, Fern, let's get over here to FanDuel. Let's put this all together and run through a lineup. Now, we did a thing yesterday where I build, then you build, and I think that worked out really, really well. So
yeah,
I'm gonna start, and I think if I'm starting, I'm gonna work off DeGrom. I'm gonna start with DeGrom, and I've got about 3K per player to attack right there, and I think, you know, the offense that I know that's going to fit that number right now is probably the Brewers. So I'm going to go and I'm going to attack the Brewers and hopefully then try to find something to balance it out. I'll get Steven Vogt in there. Sure, why not? Although maybe I'm going to save catcher. I might get Alex Avila in there anyway. So let's go ahead to, let's say John Villar is batting leadoff. Let's say, oh God, Domingo Santana is so expensive. Let's say we get Eric Thames in there, 3,500. Let's go with a third piece. Ryan Braun. It's got to be Ryan Braun. And then I've got 2,700 left. Not a lot of money here, but that's a perfect price. I get Alex Avila. I'm trying to figure out some of these other inexpensive offenses we talked about, Fern?
Some other inexpensive offenses. The Pirates.
Pirates.
I mean, the O's are inexpensive, but
here we go. Longoria, Malik Smith.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'm going to have to figure out how to, I'm going to have to punt shortstop. That's not ideal.
You could punt with Steven Giroux against Adelman.
No, that's a good call. That's a really good call. Then I have 2,600 for one last outfielder. You know, this is kind of a quick build, guys. This isn't perfect, but it's not the, you know, it's not the end of the world. And maybe I go with Jose Perel in the leadoff spot against Johnny Cueto there. That should be good. So, you know, I've got two cheap Ray, right, righty lefty, Malik Smith, Evan Longoria. I've got three cheap Milwaukee bats. Well, not cheap, but Eric Thames, John Villar, and Ryan Braun, Steven Drew, Jose Perella as my punt options, and Alex Avila at the catcher. I'm obviously going to fool with this. This is a pretty quick sketch of a build. If I can find a team that I like better, I think the Brewers are a little bit more expensive than I anticipated. They're kind of, with DeGrom, a difficult team to pair up with him. So that may not be the team to pair with DeGrom. Josh, where are you looking right now? What are you looking like?
All right. So I am going to do a line with Faria.
Okay.
So pay down a little bit at pitcher. And then I am just going to look at KC, Tampa, and Washington.
Nice.
So I got Faria, Sal Perez at, well, I'll put it this way. Perez, Lomo, Murphy, and probably Drew are locked in for me. I like Lomo in this spot more than Zim or Hosmer, and you obviously like Perez more. I mean, I guess like Wilson Ramos is decent, you know, but it's hard to not use Perez against a lefty. And then Daniel Murphy, obviously, against Adelman as a left-handed elite second base option. As I mentioned before, Steven Drew, you know, only 2,100 going against the right-handed Adelman. In Great American Ballpark is enticing, and Drew can always hit one out. You know, he's got nice power from the shortstop position. And then outfield and third base is where it gets a little hairy. Not for lack of options, but just it's hard to decide who I like the most. Rendon, Moustakas, and Longoria is definitely a dilemma. The obvious one for me, I think the most obvious one for me is Longoria. Just because he's the cheapest, and Nolasco, you know, and he's going to be hitting third most likely. So I like Longoria, but I'll put Moustakas in there just to pivot a little bit. And then my outfield is Bryce, Malix, and Jorge Soler. I could, though, not go on Bryce and pay down a bit and get, like, Dickerson and Souza in there. And then, you know, be able to afford, like, Lorenzo Cain.
Or Jorge Bonifacio.
Yeah, or Bonifacio. Yeah, I probably would prefer Bonifacio against the lefty. So right here, so let's go with this. Faria, Perez, Lomo, Murphy, Moose, Drew, Dickerson, Souza, Bonifacio.
What are the chances that Steven Drew gets up in the lineup? What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, because what, like, they batted
seven hole.
Yeah, well, they batted Goodwin leadoff, and then Dusty stuck Wilmer Defoe in the two hole, which was freaking weird. I mean,
God, the Rays are so cheap. Sorry,
They're really cheap. It's crazy. Dickerson and Souza are like cheap as shit. Malik bumped up to 3K, but Dickerson and Souza are like shockingly inexpensive.
That's wild.
I mean, even Lomo. Well, Lomo is pretty. I mean, he's pretty much like fluctuated between like 35 and 39, but he's at his low point right now. What is? I'm looking at his past salary. Yeah. So he's been between 35 and 36 for quite some time now. And then he had that one 3K game against Chris Sale.
That's crazy.
Where he went 3-for-4.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, all right. That's an interesting one, I think.
That's really interesting. There's a lot of good spots out here. God, I forget how you fall in love with so many different spots. I'm going to have a lot of Sal Perez. That's what I'm going to say about this right now.
Yeah,
right?
So I think this segues nicely. Yeah, so will I. I completely agree. I love Sal. I think this segues nicely where there's so many spots into what's going to be going on, hopefully, cross my fingers tonight with – Spectre and KG, DFS Kingsguard and DFS Spectre are two partners in crime, Ryan and Scott. They are going to join me for a little roundtable discussion about the first half, things we've learned, habits we've made, philosophies that we've, you know, developed as far as building lineups, approaching different game situations, you know, different contest types, different slate size matters. So should be an interesting discussion. And one thing I'm definitely going to hit on is my little trip to the dark side, as you know very well, Sean, when I was doing some single lineup cash game escapades there for about 2 weeks and lost about $100 of my bankroll, which sucked a fat one. But now this last week I got back to multi line building and small dollar, $2 GPPs. And I made a nice little increase on the old bankroll there. Nothing major, but just every night, you know, turning $5 into $10, $12. And so they're going to definitely talk with these fellas about building multiple lineups in MLB DFS and how I assume they think it's very important as opposed to, say, basketball, where you can just be a one lineup a night kind of guy.
Interesting. I think that's the way to do it. I think that we have to talk about these kinds of strategies. Like, you always are thinking about stuff. You always got to be learning stuff. It's definitely a must.
Yeah.
It's definitely.
So there's my plug for that upcoming episode of Lineup Logic for you fine listeners out there. As Sean, you're catching a 6 a.m. flight. Where are you going?
I am headed to a wedding, New York. You know, I still got friends getting married, you know. So I got to get out there for a wedding. My wife's standing up one of her best friends from college. I will be enjoying East Hampton.
Nice.
Strangely enough. Yeah. So, yeah, friends in high places, Fern. But hey, the other thing to keep an eye out for, guys, patreon.com/lineuplogic. You can $10 a month. You get access to all of our premium features. It's pretty great resource for recreational players. It's a very easy to use interface. It's not hard. You support the show. If you listen to the show, it supports the show. We are going to continue to pump the blog. You saw maybe some content go up there. LineupLogicDFS.com. You saw some content go up there from our YouTube channel. I'm making videos. Fern made himself a video, too, on bullpens. We're going to get that up there. You got the I just interviewed Jamie Colandro from Fantasy Team Advice. That interview's going up. So the content is just overwhelming. You know, you got to be listening and learning all evening, all afternoon, all night here for the rest of this All-Star break to try and learn as much as you can before we jump back into the second half of MLB at DFS. Let's do it.
Yeah, and one last thing that really made me smile is, man, like the amount of drama in DFS Twitter that we see pretty much on a daily basis with all the lineup providers. And, you know, some of the big wig DFS people are like at each other's throats. And I just was so happy to see people tweeting at us. You know, I know that I'm not trying to compare us to like Roto Grinders or Guru Elite or anything. I mean, we're small fish, but I am very proud of the following that we have and the people that give us, you know, their, you know, give us their patronage and spend time with us, and the acknowledgement that we are drama free. You know, we are just a bunch of friends, you know, that enjoy playing DFS and talking about it. And we just don't have time or desire to be talking shit to each other and making each other feel bad about ourselves and, you know, dragging down other people when they're being successful. And on the note of lineup providers, you know, we're not trying to just tell you what to do. We're trying to guide you in a potential direction that we are attracted to. And Sean, I mean, so I'm convinced that some of our patrons are like better DFS players than we are. I mean, they're amazing. Totally. So totally. You're not going to find drama here. You're not going to find elitism here ever.
No. And you know what? Part of it is, Really, one of the things that I love about the community is, like, we want to see people win. Like, everybody wants to see somebody else win and our, you know, because what's the point? What's the point? We're not, everybody wins, everybody loses. Some people win more than others. But the point of playing is, if winning is fun, we're always supporting guys getting out there and being successful. And that never changes, no matter, you know, no matter what, over with Lineup Logic. So feel free, if that's the kind of community you're looking for, check us out.
Here.
Certainly.
Here.
All right, man. Hey, that is it for us. Fern, good luck with the pod tonight. We'll keep in touch. Guys, keep your eyes on the podcast feed, the blog, all that stuff to get more content from Lineup Logic here. All right, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend. Good luck.
See ya.